Okay, good afternoon. As you know, I've just returned from a visit to Washington for the Nuclear Security Summit and from Ottawa, where Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper hosted me. In Washington, I met with Vice President Joe Biden, who told me that the New Zealand-US relationship is in the best shape it's been since the mid-1980s. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack was similarly positive about New Zealand. President Obama's Nuclear Security Summit brought together an unprecedented number of world leaders to Washington, all of whom made clear their commitment to the summit's objective of making it harder for terrorist organisations to get their hands on nuclear material. I want to emphasise that the focus of the summit was primarily on nuclear security rather than on nuclear disarmament. I believe this summit will result in a series of outcomes that are going to point to a safer world, such as the agreement from countries represented to take steps both individually and collectively to improve nuclear security. This will enhance the way that countries share information, the way that they agree to and comply with international rules. This may also involve clarifying the mandate of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, for work in this area. Having said that, New Zealand's commitment to nuclear disarmament is unwavering. New Zealand ministers and officials are intensively involved in preparation for next month's NPT review conference taking place in New York. This conference will focus specifically on nuclear disarmament and on non-proliferation, as well as peaceful uses of nuclear energy. In Canada, we have a very warm and long-standing relationship. Trade and Canada's interest in joining the TPP were top of the agenda. On Wednesday, I leave to visit Turkey and the Gulf states. While in Turkey, I'll take part in commemorations marking the 95th anniversary of the Gallipoli campaign. I'll be attending the Anzac Dawn Service at Gallipoli, the New Zealand National Service and the Australian National Service at Lone Pine. The Minister of Veteran Affairs, Judith Collins, will also attend. While in Turkey, I'll be undertaking the bilateral meetings in Ankara and will address a business breakfast in Istanbul. The 95th anniversary of the Gallipoli landings is a hugely significant event. The Gallipoli battles saw New Zealand suffer the highest percentage of casualties of any military campaign in the country's history. Of the 8,500 New Zealanders who served there, nearly 5,000 were wounded and 2,700 lost their lives. Anzac Day is a day to honour all Kiwis, both living and gone, who served in a war. It's also our time to think of those serving around the world today. It's humbling to be able to mark their courage and sacrifice in this way. From Turkey, I'll travel to the Gulf to undertake a bilateral visit to Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates, where business and economic links will be the focus. I'll be accompanied by Trade Minister Tim Grosser and will join a 90-strong business delegation from New Zealand. It's the largest ever business delegation from New Zealand to visit the region. The focus of the visit to the Gulf states will be on the bilateral relationship and particularly economic opportunities for New Zealand and the Gulf states. Last year, bilateral trade between New Zealand and the Gulf Cooperation Council totaled more than New Zealand $3 billion, making the GCC New Zealand's sixth largest trading partner. I'll arrive back on May the 4th. In the House this week, the government will look to advance the Waikato-Tainui Raupatu Claims Waikato River Settlement Bill and send a number of bills to select committee, such as the bill giving effect to the New Zealand-Malaysia Free Trade Agreement and a bill providing for the referendum on MMP. Wednesday is a Members' Day.
With relationships so good with the United States, is there any chance that we
I think that's very unlikely. The indications have been, I think, on both sides that still would be an aspect of difficulty for the relationship, simply because from New Zealand's point of view, we're not going to change our anti-nuclear legislation, and from the US perspective, there's no rush to change their confirm or deny policy. So I don't think it's likely to happen, but nor do I think it's of great significance to the relationship.
What about at a lower level, such as the Coast Guard ship, does it?
Well, again, it's always possible, but I think it's unlikely.
Did the cabinet consider plans on the waterfront?
On the
Auckland waterfront? About
It did, and it reached some conclusions. The Rugby World Cup Minister is going to go off and have further discussions with the ARC, and I think he'll be in a position to make some announcements the early part of this week.
Would you support the cargo sheds being removed, or do you think there's actually somewhere around that?
Well, my view is there's not much in the way of redeeming features when it comes to those sheds.
Do you have a preference on what you'd like to see?
Well, I would have liked to have seen the cruise ship terminal, actually. I think in the long-term interest of the tourism sector, that was important. But with that not being possible in the short term, then a move towards something that's appropriate for a fan zone and party central is important.
How difficult is this sort of standoff, if you like, with the council in terms of being able to move forward with plans? Is it putting plans of this project in jeopardy?
Not in terms of what we're planning in the short term, but there's no question that it made the ability for us to allow the cruise ship terminal to take place a very difficult process, because there were factions within Auckland that supported it and there were factions that were opposed. In a way, I think it speaks volumes about why the reforms in Auckland are necessary, because ultimately there have just been too many voices and too many conflicting opinions on any issue of major significance to the region.
Prime Minister, did Cabinet discuss the second treaty offer to war today?
No. It was on the agenda, but we had a very busy schedule and didn't get around to it today.
Well, one part of that obviously would be that Tūpuhi wants ownership of the Ewellerus National Park. Yeah. I mean, what would that mean for other New Zealanders?
Well, look, it's far too early to go into any of those discussions. I mean, Cabinet A hasn't had an opportunity to discuss it. I hasten to add, these are always negotiations, and we don't conduct those negotiations through the media. But all I can say is that in any actions that we take as the government, we are always mindful of the rights of all New Zealanders, not just a group we may be negotiating with.
What about something away from the ownership of a park and it's been out there before, Manamata Hake or steps towards South Pool? Yeah. In principle, what are your feelings about giving Tūpuhi some sort of pathway to South Pool?
Well, again, I don't want to prejudge any of those considerations until the Cabinet itself has had an opportunity to have some discussions. The points you raise are both well-known points. They've been subject to early negotiations by Tūpuhi. What the final negotiation and ultimately settlement, if we get that far, looks like is something that we're a long way away from finalising at this point.
But I mean, is it something that the government, could it be done? Could you help them get some sort of theoretical start to self-rule? Is it off the table?
Well, I just don't want to go into those negotiations because I'm not in a position to speak authoritatively about it. We haven't had discussions as a cabinet, and we haven't had discussions with Tūpuhi. But, they're well documented that it is always going to be a difficult negotiation. That's why it's taken so long to get to the point we have. I haven't had any formal advice, but I think it's clear for everyone to see that the impacts of the volcanic ash in Iceland is having quite an impact on New Zealanders, both in terms of their travel and the implications for business. So, unfortunately, we're dealing with an act of nature and there's very little we can do about that, but New Zealanders, like citizens from countries all around the world, are being disrupted in terms of their travel and business activities. The best advice I've had so far is I will be able to get there, but whether you'd say I'm confident is might be a step too far at this point. It's really very difficult to know, but we're obviously hopeful we'd get there. It's the 95th commemoration. It's an important opportunity for me to get there, and I'm not entirely convinced I could get there next year, so I'd certainly like to get there if I can.
Have you, just a couple of questions about that.
No, is the answer to all of those. I haven't been before. I'm very much looking forward to going. I mean, my understanding from people that have been, it's a very moving experience. There's an awful lot of New Zealanders that take the journey over from, say, the UK, where there's a lot of New Zealanders working. And my understanding is that it's quite a remarkable, if sobering experience.
Did you think about it as a young man? I
thought about going 1 year when we were living, not as a young man because I didn't really do the OAE, but when we were living in the UK, there was one particular Anzac Day we were going to go and our plans were interrupted, so we didn't make it.
Contingent that training
got off the ground here, problems with RNCA. Yeah.
Do you think that maybe it's time
to look
at the
VIP fleet? Am I looking to buy a Gulfstream 5? Tragically, no. but if you're all prepared to support me, hey, maybe we can have a chat about it later on.
Is this why you decided not to go on this plane?
No, it was because otherwise I would have had to leave virtually before I got home from the last trip. So, no,
it doesn't look like it.
Anyway, it doesn't look like it, though. No. But absolutely right in hindsight, yeah.
Did you know there's actually been a cost to tourism? Do you know there's actually been a cost to Air New Zealand and what that might be as a result of this?
I don't know what the cost is, but there will clearly be some. My understanding just from reports in the media that they're accommodating up to 500 people, and clearly there'll be people whose flights will never take place and they'll have to be reimbursed, so there'll unquestionably be a cost to Air New Zealand.
Yeah. So, are you having any work done by officials on that side?
Look, I haven't at this point. Well, let's see how things progress. I mean, the tragedy of it is there's very little any of us can do about this. It's an act of nature. It's beyond our control. It's one of those things that just shows you how many people in the world travel once there's a major stumbling block like we have at the moment. It just shows you the impact it has.
In regard to Brisbane University,
Well, I don't want to prejudge that again until we've had an opportunity to consider the matter, but there's no question that there may be some increase, but there won't be carte blanche given to universities, and that's because the taxpayer has a significant stake in funding universities at the moment. As the Minister made clear, I think, on Q&A yesterday, there is some anomalies in the system and some quirks in the system which mean that it's not working very effectively. Some courses, there hasn't been the capacity for universities to increase those fees for a very, very long period of time. Others are now being used to cross-subsidise. So getting to a more coherent and logical structure will be important, but ultimately there will be a cap on how much those fees can go up. Yeah, but I think you also have to acknowledge that those fees that come with a large price tag often come with a large paycheck. And the reality is that they are expensive courses to run. No one's underestimating the cost of becoming a doctor, but the rewards on a number of fronts are quite great. Secondly, the government itself is running a program of bonding a lot of people in those areas. So I think if we got to the point where we didn't train scientists and we didn't train engineers and we didn't train doctors because it was expensive, but we're prepared to train a lot of other people in areas that may not be as necessary in the economy, then I think we're in a fool's paradise. So I do think it's important that our tertiary sector delivers on the needs of the economy and does so in a way which delivers world-class graduates. Now, we have that at the moment, but I don't think we should kid ourselves that in some of these areas they're expensive to run.
So is that your key fee across universities, specific courses in those universities?
Well, let's describe it this way. There's clearly going to be a limit on what fees can go up, but the structure of that fee maxima might be in a slightly different way. But there won't be carte blanche ability for universities just to raise fees across the board.
There are shortages of doctors and nurses. Okay. There are shortages in the likes of doctors and nurses. Is the possibility at all that could further restrict the number of people
Well, firstly, no. It's likely the government will increase the number of doctors that can be trained. Secondly, we've embarked on a program of bonding on a voluntary basis, both doctors and nurses, and the take-up rate of the bonding has been far in excess of what all of us predicted. Actually, our greatest risk of doctors comes from Australia and their desire to go and pinch our trained staff.
Isn't it a bit strange that on one hand you've got one portfolio saying you can't have
Well, I don't think you will make it more difficult. You'll just arguably make it slightly more expensive. No, because if those doctors feel like that, they'll just bond themselves voluntarily and have their student loan written off by the government.
With student allowances, will they get the same compensation package as going to other welfare benefits if GST goes up?
I haven't looked at that fact.
Yeah. You said that you were going to Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, I am.
Is Kevin Rudd going to?
I don't know. I had a discussion with him about last year, and at that point he had preliminarily was thinking that he would make the visit to Gallipoli, but I'm not sure about his travel plans now this year.
But they've actually ignored him in the past. Sometimes I've been there, the Australian Prime Minister at the time, never went there yet. New Zealand Prime Minister was his contact.
I'm not sure that's right, actually. I always thought John Howard had been in recent times, but look, I can't comment. And anyway, in the end, that's a matter for the Australian Prime Minister and the Australian Government. From New Zealand's point of view, we see great significance in Anzac Day. We are, like everybody else, I suppose, very respectful of the efforts and the commitment and the sacrifices made by our servicemen and women, and it's only appropriate on that day that we acknowledge that. Well, look, that's a matter for the Australians. All I can say in the personal experience is, if you go back to my recent visit to Canberra last year, there's enormous emphasis put on commemorating the Anzac spirit, and they go to tremendous lengths to do that. So I've never detected anything other than the... Well, it's not for me to invite him. I mean, if he's there, then obviously we'd love to have him at our service. He is coming and we're working on a date, and it's likely to be in the middle of the year.
I just wanted to work if it might be advantage changing, if we're ready about changing this travel to Australia in June.
Yeah, well, like all of these things, it's a little bit fluid because nothing's ever specifically confirmed until nearer the time. But that will depend, obviously. I mean, clearly if President Obama ends up going down to Australia, so if there's a conflict, then we'll have to find another date. But at this stage, we're working on a couple of dates since around about that time, so we'll see how it goes.
Chancellor Clark said yesterday she believed the Securities Commission was under-resourced to perform their duties as a government. Given the recent events in the finance company sector, can you say the government's aspirations around the financial services hub is satisfied with the commission
Well, look, the first thing I say is that the Commerce Minister is looking very closely at all of these areas. The issue of appropriate regulation is a very important one, and we saw that when it came to the finance companies, that a lot of New Zealanders lost their life savings because of inadequacies in that area. Secondly, the Capital Markets Task Force has made some quite specific recommendations, and I know that the Commerce Minister is looking very closely at those recommendations and what they might mean. In terms of an international financial hub, if we were to progress that idea, and it's no secret I'm keen on that, then we would obviously ensure that that adequate regulation is in place to enable that to happen.
Is that the case at the moment?
Well, it's difficult for me to comment because obviously, it may. We're in uncharted territories when it comes to that. Whether the whole area of regulation, the financial services, could have been carried out better, I think the answer to that is yes. But we need to now work on where we go from here, and the Commerce Minister is working on that. And I expect some announcements from him in that regard fairly soon.
One of the things the local working group is looking at is the idea of insurance.
I haven't looked at it closely enough. I mean, I've seen examples of in a few countries where it's worked, but every country has a slightly different approach when it comes to welfare and how much is paid for through either levies or directly by the employee or employers, and how much is actually paid by the state. So, I'll be interested in see what their recommendations are.
Are you going to visit China soon?
My next planned visit is for the Shanghai Expo in the middle of the year. I think it's July, the middle of July.
Where will you visit and where will you meet Chinese leaders?
Yes, so it would be my intention to go to Shanghai for a couple of days and then up to Beijing and meet with either President Hu or Premier Wen.
Do you believe that a member of Falun Gong in our country, she was removed back to China? Do you think it put her in danger in China?
Well, if you're asking about the specific case in question, which I think you are, look, I just don't have the details on that. It's an operational matter. You need to take that up with the minister. I don't look at individual cases.
So you agree that the Falun Gong people are still not free in China?
Well, all I'd say to you, in terms of those specific cases, you have to take them up with the minister.
Looking at your trip to the Gulf and to Turkey,
yep.
Do you think that being seen as not part of the coalition of the willing in Iraq has been a trade advantage to us in the region?
No, I'm not sure that would be a big determining factor.
There might be some help to us, given you'll be talking to people who may well favour New Zealand's relative neutrality on that issue.
Well, that may be the case. I mean, there's always sensitivities in that region, as there are around the world. But when it comes to trade, I mean, in the end, I think the reason why we are in a position to develop the kind of trade links we have are much more dominated by the fact that we have an open view to trade, that we have high-quality products, and that we are keen free traders rather than specifically our foreign policy issues.
Roger Kerr seemed to be saying in a comment perhaps when the budget would announce legislation for the cap on government spending. Does he know something that we don't?
No, and I was surprised to see those comments. I mean, all I can say is it's no great secret that the new budget spending component of $1.1 billion will be what you'll see in the budget, and that's likely what you'll see in many years to come, as the Minister of Finance has highlighted in the past. But in terms of actual regulation around increases, there is no regulation in the budget. There's no regulated cap.
So where is the arrangement with Rodney Hyde to look at that issue at?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I know it's an idea that they have favoured, and I think they've done some work on it. But in terms of the budget, there's no regulated cap.
My memory was it was on the agenda before Christmas last year. It was put off because of the crisis this year. Is it still ongoing?
I can't tell you what discussions the Minister of Finance has had with him, because I'm not aware of that. And I know he's keen on his regulatory responsibility bill, but that's a different angle. But in terms of regulated caps on spending increases, there's no such thing in the budget.
Mr. Hyde says there's a commitment to introduce legislation by the end of the year.
Well, I haven't seen any of that yet.
Where have you been getting
the idea from? Don't know. But he's wrong. Last time I looked at the budget package, there was no regulated cap.
But you wouldn't oppose sending legislation to a select committee that could look at introducing a cap?
Well, look, in principle, we've got our own self-imposed cap, which we've made clear, which is $1.1 billion. Anything beyond that, we can go and have a look at. But the kind of model that some have proposed, which is a percentage of GDP being fixed in legislation, I don't support. And the reason I don't support that is I think it's failed in the areas where it has been imposed, because where you have a recession and GDP falls, by definition you've got to spend less money, and in fact what that means is you drive the recession often a lot deeper. And I think there are times, as we've seen in the last 12 or 18 months, where there's been a recession and governments have responded by increasing their support for the economy. And that's not always appropriate, but sometimes it is. And on that basis, I wouldn't support that. If you're talking about, well, I've never been a great supporter of something as a fixed percentage of GDP. If they're talking about something different, we can go and look at that. But at this stage, I think you've got to have some freedom in
capacity. Do you get to go to a select committee so you can have the department
prepared to do that? That may take place, but we haven't had those discussions yet. Largely, yes, I'd say.
So last time we did that budget package, you were just talking about,
did
that GST?
We're not going to have a discussion about the budget today. Much as I'd love to, but we'll unwrap all your presents at once.
One form of a regulatory cap that Roger Kerr did discuss in that call this morning was a Colorado-type initiative at local government level, which entails a kind of ratcheting down of the monies available to local government.
And that was the genesis of Mr. Hyde's opposition bill, private members bill. Has he subsequently discussed that with you as something that he would like to introduce this year?
Well, he hasn't had any discussions with me. Again, he may have had discussions with the Minister of Finance, but you have to take it up with him.
Right.
Okay. Okay, sure. Yes, in principle, and of course, there's always room for debate and discussion about these matters. And the regulatory responsibility bill that he's proposing is quite different from a spending cap. But I'm not opposed to a discussion in that area. I'm not opposed to discussion in any of these areas. I just personally don't think a cap which is based off GDP works personally, and there is no spending cap in the budget other than a self-imposed $1.1 billion cap. Well, I'm just saying that's my personal view.
Yeah, but he's admitted I'm talking about the
responsibility bill.
He's admitted that he can't. He
hasn't been able to convince ministers. To the best of my knowledge, he's had discussions with a number of ministers. He's given me probably a 15-minute update a few months ago. It's not a black and white thing. There's a whole lot of area for potential debate, and I know that him and the Minister of Finance have been going back and forth and having some discussions. What it might lead to, I don't know at this point, but let's wait and see. Thank you.